Hey folks, welcome to Pearls and Perspectives. I'm Dr. Amy Pearlman, board certified urologist with expertise in sexual, hormonal, and genitourinary health. And I'm at the SMSNA in Grapevine, Texas with my great friend, Dr. Alex Tatum. Alex, say hello to the crew.
Hey, Amy, it's good to see you.
So good to see you as well. I get to see you at all these different meetings, and I learn something new from you every time we chat. And we were hanging out like, what, 2 nights ago in Grapevine. We were at a beautiful dinner, and it was at the Women in Prosthetic Urology kind of dinner.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you had your physician assistant, Kristen, there. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that event meant for you and Kristen and what it was all about?
Sure. So, Women in Prosthetic Urology started as this initiative back in 2018, primarily led by Boston Scientific, with the idea of trying to create a warm and inviting space for women in prosthetic urology and what's been, historically a male dominated field. And, at the time, I thought that, this is a great thing. But, as a guy, I never imagined myself going to those dinners. I joked, I was like, I didn't know if this was like, if I was invited or if this is a safe space. But what's happened over the years is WIPU has continued to grow. And along that same time frame, our practices continue to grow. And I joke that, we run a men's health center and I only see and treat men, but my entire practice is run by women. With the exception of my new partner, Dr. Austin Service, who has just, joined us, truthfully, if you look at our APP workforce, if you look at my manager, my nurses, many of our, patient coordinators and ancillary staff, I mean, they're primarily women. And so, and chief among those is Kristen Gump, who serves as our men's health center lead for our APPs. And so Kristen has been, essentially my partner in crime now for about a little over 2 years. And she has just absolutely soared in redefining what APPs can do in the prosthetic space. And so she was invited to speak on this panel of some other really, really awesome women in prosthetic urology. And I was bound and determined to be there to support her. And, it was really interesting. It was a really cool energy to sit in the back as a fly on the wall in this room full of really, really cool girls that were so excited and passionate about prosthetics. And they were inspired by seeing others who had come before them talking about how this space is for them. This space is for everyone. So that was a really, really cool experience.
It was a really great panel. I've been to WIPU events like really since its inception several years ago. And I would say this is like one of the best panels that I've been to.
Again, this is the first time I was brave enough to go. So I can't speak to the previous ones.
Yeah.
But I really, really enjoyed hearing the perspectives of my colleagues with, a different background and a different approach than me, speak to, what's worked for them, what are the challenges, and more so than looking at the panel, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. Kristen did an amazing job, taking a step back and looking at the audience and looking at how enraptured they were and enthralled with the words they were hearing and inspiring it was to them. That was what was really cool for me, because you can see that fire being lit in the next generation to, kind of come up. And I don't know, it was a really cool privilege to be there for that.
Yeah. Well, it was great that you were there supporting, not just Kristen, but really everyone in the room. Mm. Okay. Now I want to ask an interesting question.
Sure.
Now that session was really focused on this collaboration between, advanced practice providers and physicians, how we can really elevate the space when we work together. But in like other meetings that we've had with WIPU and just other meetings, when it's kind of like women in urology, women in prosthetic urology, it's kind of like this sentiment from women that we deal with challenges that men do not. Mm. And one that, commonly comes up is this notion of imposter syndrome. Mm. But I feel like, and this is why I want to ask you, that is not just for women. Like, women are not the only people who have imposter syndrome. Are we missing the mark?
Well, I think that, imposter, women do not have a monopoly on imposter syndrome. Yeah. And, I was speaking to, some of my close friends, last night, where, you know, I feel like at every stage, at least in my career, I've dealt with some form of imposter syndrome. You know, at first it's like, you know, am I really good enough to be doing these surgeries and taking care of these patients? And then, you know, you establish yourself, you establish, you know, a level of degree of confidence and authority in the space, but then it's always the next step, right? Am I really in a place to be leading such a large group of amazing people? Mm-hmm. Am I really in a position where I can be training others in this space? And so I think that imposter syndrome is something that we all have to deal with. And what I have found to be really, really helpful is instead of losing focus and comparing myself to others around me, and, you know, all, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, right? Is really just focusing on my patients, focusing on my team, focusing on the level of care that we provide. And then after a while, whenever you see that you've been getting really, really good results and you see that your patients really are happy, I mean, what else matters? So that's what I found has worked for me and for my team. I try to have frequent check-ins with my teammates and, you know, be their biggest cheerleader. Personally, I found that, you know, focusing on what really matters and taking the focus away from, you know, maybe external individuals, that's been really meaningful and helpful.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, as a woman, like, we definitely deal with our own sets of challenges, but I'm, you know, my sense is that this imposter syndrome is more so related to people just being new in their careers and not experienced. And whenever we're learning a new skill, whether it's like mid or late career, we're always going to have that imposter syndrome because we don't have that expertise yet. Mm. I feel like that's sort of like this this factor that really brings us all together, right? But not really, I don't think it's specific to gender.
I don't think so. I do think that it's something that we should speak about a little bit more openly. That's something I did enjoy about the Weep Your Dinner, is that it was put out there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everyone kind of had this like sigh of relief, because it's something that we hold in tightly, because God forbid if anyone realizes that we may, you know, think we're an imposter, they'll realize us for the imposter we are. And I really appreciate the fact that we can be, you know, more open with it. And I think that we need to be very intentional as, you know, leaders in our own practices, leaders in this space, to really encourage those that are newer in their careers, those that are coming up, especially we talked about APP collaboration. You know, I fully believe that, you know, APPs should be able to practice at the limit of their license. Mm-hmm. And in my practice and in my mind, that limit is, well, you can't necessarily be the primary surgeon on a case. That's just not, you know, that's not how it works. But literally anything else below that, if we're talking about assisting in the operating room, signing patients up for surgery, evaluating them afterwards, speaking for educational webinars, you know, creating outreach content so that patients can learn more about this, their disease state. I mean, all of that is completely within the purview of our wonderful PA and NP colleagues. And so I think that just being open and honest with them and letting them know that, you know, the sky's the limit and that they have a space here, that this is for them, encouraging them, you're not an imposter, you're a budding expert in this field, I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I love seeing you and Kristen interact. And you guys do a lot of podcasting together.
You know, we do. I try to be mindful of the fact that that is not technically in her job description. And I try not to take her away from, you know, her husband too much. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to, you know, basically just have conversations on camera about the things that we deal with in clinic every day and try to remove that stigma for patients and hopefully, you know, try to provide good information, because patients are out there. They're searching. Whenever I want to figure anything out, you know, outside of medicine, I go to YouTube. So it makes sense that patients do the same thing with their, you know, their struggles. So, you know, instead of just, you know, complaining like, you know, many people maybe want to do, well, let's go ahead and do something about it. Let's create something that is high yield, high quality, educational, that we can be proud of. And let's put it out there for patients to have as a reference.
Yeah. And actually, a lot of your content is kind of like a little bit fringy, right? It's a little bit fringy in that it talks about a variety of like anabolic steroids and things that we as urologists are never taught in our training. Mm-hmm. And you get a ton of like views on that content. Where do these topics come from? Are these things that like patients are asking you in clinic, or you're looking online and you're seeing what's trending, or you're looking at what are we not doing as urologists to educate people? Where's the gap in the knowledge and how can I fill that gap?
You know, honestly, the content I cover is the things that patients are interested
yeah.
in. They want answers. They want clarity.
We think we know. We create content on the same stuff all the time. It's like how many times we need to define ED.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, honestly, like there is still a lot of value yeah. for, you know, hitting the core competencies of erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. Peyronie's disease, and making sure that we're putting good information out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, if I get one more, you know, AI generated YouTube video telling me about how some herb is going to straighten the man's Peyronie's plaque, yeah, I'm going to lose my mind. So there is a lot of value there. But the yeah. truth is that, you know, the men's health, sexual medicine space, women's health space has become extremely dynamic. Mm-hmm. And what is happening in culture is moving at a much, much faster pace than what has traditionally been presented at meetings like this. And I'm very glad that the SMSNA has been more progressive with asking speakers like Dr. Larry Lipschultz, Dr. Mokira to speak on topics like peptides, mm-hmm. to speak on topics like, you know, what do we really know about superphysiologic testosterone? But the truth is that this is what patients are interested in. This is what many of them are pursuing on their own. And so what I feel my obligation is to try and meet patients where they are, to create educational science-based content that covers these topics in what at least is the most objective way that I'm capable of doing, and to try and provide them, you know, some guidance. So maybe they can make a more well-informed decision with their bodies.
Yeah, I love that. Whenever I have like patients coming in asking about some of those questions about, you know, some of like the performance enhancers, I text them like all day long, you just like randomly, and he always responds because yeah. I don't want to just poo-poo the patient. I don't want to just say, well, no, don't do that. Or, you know, that's like a terrible idea because I'm going to lose his trust as a patient.
Yeah.
And I need to come at it. Like, even if I'm not going to be prescribing those medications, I need to come at it with a level of like curiosity that says like, hey, I care about you. I care about your safety. Let me learn a little bit more about this to see if there's like any big red flags that we need to watch out for. Are there any additional labs I need to check, even though I'm not managing that medication, where like, at least I'm checking the labs and keeping this person safe.
Yeah. And, you know, believe it or not, there is a lot that has been, you know, learned just from experience in the performance enhancement space mm-hmm. by patients, by athletes that was, you know, denied by, you know, the medical establishment for many years. I believe it was up until the 1980s. There are many professional medical societies that denied that testosterone was a performance enhancing drug. And in reality, we know that bodybuilders and many athletes were using anabolic steroids to great effect for many, many decades. You know, injectable testosterone cypionate came on the market in 1951, was used ubiquitously in bodybuilding and in sports for years and years. They knew that it worked, and that was denied. And so patients lost trust in their doctors because they felt like they couldn't come and talk to them. And they were effectively being gaslit about what they knew to be true. And it wasn't until 1996 when, you know, Shalinder Basin did his 600 milligram of testosterone a week study showing, you know, significant lean mass accrual, you know, over the course of, I believe it was only 10 weeks that, you know, people were like, oh, okay, yeah, no, maybe like testosterone actually, you know, does work. By the way, 1951, 1966, it took a little while for the medical establishment. 1996. So, I mean, it took a while. There was a bit of a lag there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And you've been moving and grooving at this meeting, and you presented some work. Mm. So do you want to talk a little bit about that study that you presented?
Well, yeah. Honestly, I think that, you know, one of the most exciting studies that, you know, I've had a chance to be a part of in a while was what was, you know, discussed at this meeting regarding treating ventral curves mm-hmm. in Peyronie's disease with Xiaflex, with collagenase. And, you know, it's interesting that if you go back to the original IMPRESS trials, looking at trying to treat Peyronie's disease, which is, you know, the new onset lump, bump, or curve to an erection that causes deformity, shortening, curvature, primarily due to scar tissue that's developed within the tunica albuginea, you know, the patients that had ventral curves were excluded from IMPRESS. Mm-hmm. And the reason was is at the time when you're a drug company and you're trying to get something across the finish line, you want to be very conservative because you want your trial to be successful so that you can, you know, get your product and get your solution out there. But we know that 17% of patients actually do present with ventral curve. And so if we deny those patients XIAFLEX, their options are pretty limited. Yeah. You're looking at either a dorsal plication, which for many patients just is not a great option because of the significant amount of length loss. Also, if the patient has other more complex deformity like hourglass, you know, wasting, you know, if you try to do a plication with that, you're going to have a lot of instability and it's not a great result. So that means that your next option is trying to lift the urethra surgically, which is a very complex procedure that, you know, I'm proud to offer my patients whenever it's appropriate. But the challenge is that whenever you lift that urethra and you excise that scar tissue on the underside of the penis, that is an intrinsically weaker area to try and do a graft. And so unless you put a penile implant in at the same time, a significant number of those men with a patch and graft and no implant with a ventral patch, they're going to develop profound erectile dysfunction afterwards. And so a number of us for the past several years essentially were like, you know, hey, let's try and treat these guys with XIAFLEX and let's just see what happens. And what we did is we went ahead and pooled multiple centers together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of my, you know, wonderful colleagues, you know, across, you know, the United States, and all together with, you know, multiple centers, we got 114 patients. Okay. All right. Looking at their treatment, we ended up finding out that 70% of patients ended up getting a 20-degree or greater improvement, 20% or greater improvement, and 63% of patients ended up with a 30% or greater improvement. And what's interesting is that whenever that actually played out, those patients did better than the patients with dorsal curves as part of the original IMPRESS trials. Mm-hmm. And so, and when you look at the, what we were concerned about, which is, are you going to damage the urethra? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be conveying some untoward risk to the patient? We found that, you know, treatment adverse related events were only, you know, 10%. And it was the same sort of bruising, swelling, small hematomas that you might see with traditional XIAFLEX therapy for lesions and on the dorsum of the penis. And so essentially, we were able to show that the use of collagenase, of XIAFLEX, is both safe and effective for men that have ventral curve and a palpable plaque.
Yeah. And I was in a session yesterday where Jesse Mills was on stage and someone asked him, well, what if you get the XIAFLEX in the urethra? You know, what do you do in that scenario? Is that dangerous? And that's kind of like the question, like, if I get it in the wrong spot, is it dangerous? And his response was, no, you just kind of lose the medication.
Yes.
Right? You're not getting it in the right spot, which is a downside, but you're not going to hurt the patient.
Yeah. And I think that that comes down to maybe a misconception about XIAFLEX. Mm-hmm. You know, people see XIAFLEX and they see some of the bruising and swelling that, you know, we know can happen with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get the idea that we're injecting kerosene. And that's not exactly how this works. You know, this is a very targeted, you know, cocktail of enzymes that are designed to take out type 1 and type 3 collagen. And so if you inject it into tissue that is not abundant in type 1 and type 3 collagen, oh yeah, you might get a little bruising, but I mean, that's about it. You're not going to be causing some sort of, you know, catastrophic, you know, local reaction. And I can speak from a place of experience, having treated many, many men with ventral curves with collagenase, that really their experience is, you know, no different than the men that have a dorsal plaque. So no, it is very, very safe. And it's something that I do not think is fringe. Mm-hmm. I do not think it is, you know, something that should be reserved for tertiary centers only. Mm-hmm. I think that every urologist that offers collagenase, you know, should feel comfortable with, provided they have enough experience and can actually just feel the plaque, you know, they should feel comfortable offering it to the men that have these ventral curves.
Sorry, Alex, I'm not squinting at you, but I'm looking directly into the sun right now. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I think if I recall correctly, when this initially was described using XIAFLEX for ventral curvature, there was discussion of using an ultrasound to identify where you are. Are people using ultrasound, or are you just feeling for the plaque and kind of feeling with the needle when you're in the plaque?
Yeah, you know, I'm not aware of any, you know, high volume injectors these days still relying on ultrasound. Okay. I do believe that there might be a role for maybe incredibly small or discrete plaques. When I was in fellowship, we did that maybe once or twice. But what I found in my practice is what really matters is being able to put the needle in the right place, which is going to be primarily based off of feel, because you're looking for that densest part of the plaque, which is something that you're going to do with your hands. And so, you do have to have experience. You do have to do it. But the truth is that we have a robust training program for our mid-level providers, and we have a certain number of XiaFlex injections they have to observe. They have to have a certain number of injections that are guided hand over hand by their proctor, and then eventually, you know, they're put on their own. And that's how it works for everyone whenever you're learning how to do something new in medicine. So, you know, once you have the skills and the abilities to identify a plaque dorsally, you can do the same thing ventrally.
Awesome. Well, I love that. So it's, let's see, what month are we in? We're in the month of October.
Yep.
Got a few more months left of 2025. What are you looking forward to the rest of the year?
You know, honestly, it is a very, very busy time. I've got some really exciting things coming up. Professionally, in 2 weeks, I get the privilege to go speak at the Coloplast National Sales Meeting, which is going to be a lot of fun. I have a top secret meeting, you know, the week after that, you know,
top secret.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll hear about it later.
I know.
Maybe not.
Yeah. You will.
If you tell me, well, you have to kill me.
No. We just have to embargo this, but dealing with some innovation in the penile implant space. And then, you know, personally, next week I get to take my kids to Chicago to go see The Lion King.
Awesome.
I'm super excited about that. Yep. So. Lots of good things.
Oh my God. I remember watching that movie as a little kid and just crying when they hold up Simba.
Yeah, it has been on repeat in our house for the past 2 months, and we managed to get tickets to the Broadway show up in Chicago. So, you know, it's only about a, you know, 3-something hour drive up from Indianapolis. So we're going to go make a few days of it, take the kids to the aquarium, and, you know, try to spend some time connecting with family, because, I mean, listen, like, we are blessed to have an incredible career and incredible colleagues. But one of the reasons why we chose this, why we chose sexual medicine, is because we know how important relationships are. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's important that we, you know, try to model that, you know, not just professionally in how, you know, we prioritize patients' intimate healthcare needs, but also prioritizing, you know, relationships in our personal life.
Absolutely.
So there you go.
Now, Alex, you're looking pretty strong. Should we end this recording with a little arm wrestle?
Oh, yeah. Or maybe we should do the push-up challenge or whatever the Bobby and Pete Hegseth test is.
Maybe that'll be on the next podcast.
Maybe next time.
Thank you all for joining us today on Pearls and Perspectives. Alex, always good to see you.
Thanks, Amy. Great to talk to you.